What do you want to say to the people of Flint who are still mad about this whole thing?
That they have every right to be. What we heard from the people of Flint today is what we expected and even more, is that they are hurt. They are still going through the pain.
Even those that were continue to mistrustful, we get that. And we're going to do our very best to try to change their minds about that and try to do and bring justice to this community.
General Solicitor Fatma Hamoud and Wayne County Prosecutor Kim Worthy say they're giving the people of Flint the investigation they deserve.
We had to make sure that we do the investigation the way we know a proper investigation has to be done.
Saying the previous investigation into the Flint water crisis had seized 5 mobile devices for evidence. Now, after dropping the original investigation and starting fresh, they've seized 600 and nearly 20 million documents.
We have a long way to go.
Restarting the investigation was a divisive issue amongst Flint residents. And after tonight's meeting, where the prosecution team filled them in on the latest info, some feel better.
I do. I understand why they had to drop everything now, because they're doing an in-depth dive and investigation on all the other information that they've come up with, things that were suppressed by the Snyder administration. And I'm praying that they get him and all his cohorts.
Others feel worse.
This wasn't new, and they keep saying that the previous, prosecution team was just full of propaganda. That's all tonight was. There were no actual answers given. Basically, the theme was not our fault and go where the evidence leads us. And so it's the same as always. It's nothing new, and here we are, except now we're sitting with no pending charges.
The next step, scouring the millions of documents and coming up with who to charge and what to charge them with. And the hard part is, they've only got 9 months to do it because of the statute of limitations. We'll let you know what happens. Reporting in Flint, Scott Walchek, WNEN, TV5.
All right. Hey, fam. It is Phoenix Kalita hanging out with you in the wine cellar. We're going to try this recording one more time. If you've been following my social media today, you'll see I've tried to podcast a couple times and keep getting caught up with other things, having to answer phone calls and do bureaucratic paperwork and whatnot. So, third time's a charm. We're actually going to nail the podcast this time, I promise, I hope, all that jazz. All right, so as we've been doing with the summer schedule, it's just kind of me by my lonesome because William is doing all the hours and is coming home tired and fried and just in a state of utter exhaustion. And that means me, yay, get to do the podcast, so y'all just going to have to tolerate that. All right, let me see if I can open up my soundboard. Play an opener, talk about some news, some comment. Also, just want to say congratulations to everybody who came out this month during Pride. That includes, who is it? Lil Nas X. Everybody Lil something these days. The Old Town Road guy. So, congratulations. I hope that his mentions aren't too fucking horrible. All right, let's get down to some shit.
Now, sisters and brothers, we know we got over by the blood, the sweat, and the tears. Of sheroes and heroes, some whose names we know and some whose names we do not know. But I want to tell you something. We have been here before. Now, the only difference is we got some company, Rev. We got our gay lesbian sisters and brothers with us this time. We got our Hispanic, Asian, Native American sisters and brothers with us this time. I think Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King said we may not have gotten here on the same ship, but we are in the same boat right now.
In Father Teresa's Wine Cellar, we believe all oppression is intersectional. And this means our analysis of current events frequently includes discussion of difficult and explicit content. Any combination of the following topics could be included in our show: murder, rape, war, climate change, racism, sexism, violence, sexual violence, homophobic violence, heterocentrism, discrimination and abuse against individuals of nonconformist sexuality, domestic violence, child abuse, child rape, child neglect, elderly abuse, verbal abuse, police brutality, microaggressions, ableism, cyberbullying, genital mutilation, ideological extremism, and people just being total fucking assholes.
All right. So, let's get down to it, shall we? I suppose we can start off because it is July 1st, which means Pride just ended, which means the homophobes are upset and in their fucking feelings, as they tend to be. So, I found this story. I'm in this, like, goofy-ass Facebook group. It's called Unbelievable, and it's, like, these weird fucking evangelical apologists who are just, just basically trying to argue with atheists about these fucking gotchas and whatnot. It's all nonsense. And one of the articles they shared in here, which was framed as discrimination, like, the title of the article is IKEA sacks employee for quoting the Bible after he was told to participate in pro-LGBTQ event. And then, of course, the question was, should corporations be able to force employees to promote ideologies that are contrary to the employee's religion or principles and then discriminate against those that do not share their motives? So, I'm just, you know, interested, right? So I was like, let me fucking click this article and see what's going on. And this is off the Calderon Pool. And it turns out that the headline was slightly misleading. Who saw it coming? So, the headline says, IKEA sacks employee for quoting the Bible after being told to participate in pro-LGBTQ event. Here's what actually happened. All right. The long-term employee, only known as Thomas K., was sacked by IKEA after he refused to withdraw critical comments he posted on the company's internet, which included Bible quotes. So, obviously, this is from a non-American outlet, but the impression I'm getting is that he posted about the company on his social media. Okay? The store posted a notice asking staff to join in celebrating International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, and Transphobia. Staff were also allegedly asked to pay attention to people's preferred pronouns and engage in positive conversations with the LGBTQ people about gay partners and same-sex families. Tomas responded by saying acceptance and promotion of homosexuality and other deviations is a source of scandal. So they posted on their social media, IKEA said, hey, attend this event. Let's give respect people's pronouns. And this guy's like, no. Which is also, I mean, I know people are making the argument like, well, legally, you know, freedom of religion and blah, blah, blah. But I'm like, I'm not fucking buying that because you're literally saying you have a right to give people shitty customer service because you don't like who they're fucking. Because that's what's going to happen. If you're not respecting people's pronouns or you think being gay is an abomination, like, what is your customer service going to look like if a gay couple comes in and is like, yeah, we would like to buy a bed or we would like to buy a kitchen table because we just moved in together or whatever. Like, obviously, and that's that shit. Like, I say it all the time, you know, like, bigots don't clock out of homophobia when they clock into a work shift. They're fucking bigots who are on this bullshit, you know, as is, and that's how strongly you feel about hating gay people, you're not going to treat any LGBT customers with respect or dignity. Like, and, you know, this whole shit about, well, I'm being discriminated against because I can't practice my religion. Your religion is literally being shitty to other people. You can't do that in a business setting. All right. And in a statement issued by IKEA, they said the employee actually used quotes from the Old Testament about death and blood in the context of what fate should meet homosexuals. Many employees concerned by this entry contacted our HR department. Oh, so he didn't even just stop at saying, I don't like gay people. He said gay people deserve to die. And he's like, I don't know why I can't just call for random groups of people to be assassinated. After being fired, Tomas told the television network TVP Info, I was shaken up. Oh, I just clicked the wrong thing and it clicked me away from my article. I've been hired to sell furniture, but I'm a Catholic and these aren't my values. But again, so if you're Catholic and you're that homophobic, how are you going to treat gay customers? Right. Okay. So you were going to make your company look bad and think you were legally allowed to do it. According to Bloomberg, Justice Minister, holy shit, I'm going to nail this fucking name. Zbigniew Ziobro, sure, told TVP Info, if confirmed by the investigation, the episode shows how foreign companies in Poland, quote, discriminate against those who don't share their values. It's unacceptable and scandalous. Mind you, scandalous. Not being allowed to publicly post on your employer's website that we should be able to go around and kill all the gays. Scandalous. Patrick Jackie, a ruling party lawmaker and Zaboro's former deputy, offered Tomas legal help and called for a boycott of IKEA if investigations found the retailer was discriminating against Catholics. So this is shit. It wasn't because he was Catholic. It's because he got on their fucking social media and said, we should kill the gays. That's what the fuck happened. Damn. Okay. So good to know that it's 2019 and people still want to assassinate people for being queer. So, so much progress. The gay agenda is really winning, guys. Don't you feel good about the gay agenda? Yeah, mm-hmm. It's winning. We're winning. All right, and since we're wrapping up Pride, as it were, right? Because, you know, July 1st, Pride Month just ended. So we have an update on a story that was covered earlier about a lesbian couple, I believe this was in the UK, who were sitting on a bus together. Oh, yeah, it says in London. Who were sitting on a bus together, and they were assaulted by a group of young men who were like, kiss for us, we want to see you kiss, and then started, you know, suggesting, you know, like sexual poses and things like that. And eventually the women wouldn't go along with what they wanted, so they beat up the women. And of course there were photos going around the internet of, you know, these women bleeding at the scene. One woman was wearing a white shirt and there was just blood everywhere. So a fifth teenager, and these were teenagers, I would just like to know who's raising these young men, was arrested in an attack against a lesbian couple on a London bus. Melania Gaymanot said in a Facebook post that the group demanded she and her girlfriend kiss, she and her girlfriend Chris kiss each other so they could enjoy watching before beating them. Ow. Thus far, five teenagers have been arrested for legally attacking and robbing a lesbian couple who said they were victims of a vicious homophobic attack on a London bus after refusing demands that the pair kiss. Both women, Melania Gemanot, I don't know how to say her last name, and her girlfriend Chris were left bruised and covered in blood, according to a Facebook post that Gemanot put on her Facebook page. She says that she and Chris were on a night bus May 29th, days before the LGBTQ Pride Parade Month began, traveling to Camden Town, where a group of at least four guys insisted they kiss so the boys could enjoy watching. The teens also started describing sexual positions and threw coins at the women. In an attempt to calm things down, I started making jokes I thought that might make them go away. Chris even pretended she was sick, but they kept harassing us, throwing coins and becoming more enthusiastic. Then Gaymanot said the next thing she knew, Chris was in the middle of the bus fighting with the men. On impulse, I went there to find her face bleeding and three of them hitting her. The next thing I know, I'm being punched and was bleeding all over. After the bus stopped, London police eventually showed up. Metropolitan Police said in a press release Friday, the four alleged attackers between 15 and 18 were arrested on suspicion of robbery and aggravated grievous bodily harm. They were taken to separate police stations for questioning. A fifth person was arrested Saturday morning. Police Detective Superintendent Andy Cox said that the assault was a disgusting attack. London Mayor Sadiq Khan tweeted that hate crimes against LGBT people will not be tolerated in London. A cell phone and bag were stolen during the altercation, which was caught on surveillance camera, authorities said. Both women, who are in their 20s, were taken to a hospital for injuries to their faces. Gaymanot, who said she has not been able to return to work, told the BBC she had previously experienced a lot of verbal violence because of her sexuality, but had never been physically attacked prior to last week's assault. Mm-hmm. So that's what's going on. And keep in mind, as people are being arrested, as police investigate this hate crime, that far right-wing journalists, one of them is Andy, the adorable Asian reporter loosely stated, who works with right-wing outlets and pushes right-wing propaganda, insisted that this was a fake hate crime that was made up as a hoax in order to bring sympathy to white women, basically, or to the white queer community. And he recently got a little Antifa action and raised like $100,000. So it's just interesting when he's hate crimed, suddenly the right cares about identity politics. Antifa's beating up an Asian reporter. But when two lesbians are attacked on public transit, like, nope, fake news. So I see you. But of course, I'll try to follow up with this and see, you know, where this goes now that arrests have been made. We'll see what happens. Maybe there'll be some progress. I don't know. That's just really unfortunate that, you know, toxic masculinity exists. That's all I can say about it. It's really fucking unfortunate. So, yeah. All right. Connecticut. Mm-hmm. In Connecticut, a gallery owner has been arrested after dropping a 10-foot-long sculpture of a heroin spoon in front of Purdue Pharma's headquarters on Friday, and he says he plans to gift more spoons to other drug companies as well as politicians and doctors. All right. Fernando Luis Alvarez, who owns Stanford's Fernando Luis Alvarez Gallery, was charged with a criminal misdemeanor and a felony after leaving the roughly 800-pound piece, which was handmade by Boston-based artist Dominic Esposito, in Purdue's driveway and refusing to move it, according to the Hartford Courant. Alvarez told Time the stunt, which coincided with an opioid-related show at his gallery, was meant to send a message to Purdue Pharma and to hold the company accountable for what he says are its contributions to the country's opioid epidemic. The bigger picture, which Dominic and I really clicked on, is the importance of creating awareness for the right type of accountability. The Justice Department in the country has to start putting some of these people behind bars because they go and make a lot of money and then just pay a fine and so be it. That's not the way it should be. Uh-huh. Stanford-based Purdue Pharma, which makes the widely prescribed opioid painkiller OxyContin, has drawn scrutiny for its sales and marketing practices, which several lawsuits allege have led to improper prescribing practices that have contributed to patient misuse. Purdue has denied these allegations, but the company stopped promoting the drug in February. They were promoting OxyContin until last February? Holy shit. A Purdue representative said, quote, "We share protesters' concerns about the opioid crisis and respect their right to peacefully express themselves." Wait, so who the fuck called the police on them for putting this sculpture up, though? A sculpture's not hurting nobody. I don't know. Purdue is committed to working collaboratively with those affected by the public health crisis on meaningful solutions to help stem the tide of opioid-related overdose deaths. Which is like, what does that even mean? Because all this fucking shit I've seen that's like, here, we're here to fix the opioid crisis, is really just shit that only hurts people who have chronic pain. It doesn't actually address the underlying issues of addiction. Like, all right, whatever. All right. Yeah, so I'm just scanning the rest of the article. Aha, so with the artist who has a brother who has struggled with addiction for 14 years. Mm-hmm. The artist says he can remember his mother calling him and screaming when she found burnt spoons in the house. He says the air gets sucked out of your body because here you are all over again. The spoon is a symbol of darkness. It brings back negative emotions for me. The sculpture, he says, was a way to channel those emotions into something productive. All right, so we'll see what happens. It's interesting. I think that there's a lot going on with the opioid crisis. I'm not sure that, you know, spoon sculptures are the best way to solve it, but we'll see what happens. I don't know. All right. Fuck, I played the trigger warning, right? Y'all want this fucking bad news, huh? A 10-month-old baby girl named Faith Percy is in critical condition after being shot in the head by a man who wanted a relationship with her mother, according to police. Faith Percy was shot about 4 a.m. on Sunday and rushed to a local hospital where a bullet fragment was removed from her head in Fresno, California, according to Police Chief Jerry Dyer. Damn. The shooting unfolded after Faith went with her mother, Desiree Minog, age 18, to a family gathering that night. There, Minog ran into a man she had met a week prior, 23-year-old Marcos Echartea, and he tried to grab her hand. Megan pulled away and went outside and told friends what happened. Echartea later came outside and tried to pull Megan onto him and force her to sit in his lap, according to the police chief. She resisted, pulled away, and went back in the house where she got her baby and decided to leave. There was no relationship. It was very apparent that he wanted a relationship with her, though, according to Dyer. Echartea also went inside and then came back out, according to the police chief. Minog said the baby got into a car driven by a friend and they drove away. As they started to park, she noticed Echartea walking hurriedly towards the car. He then pulled out a gun and fired 3 rounds into the driver's side window, which was up. One round hit Faith on the side of the head as her mother, who was sitting in the front passenger seat, was holding her. If the windows were down, the baby might have been killed, according to Dyer. Damn. We're hoping and praying baby Faith is able to survive this injury. I know the parents are broken. They're hurting. We held hands at the hospital and prayed over the baby. Echartea was identified as the shooter and taken into custody. Wow. He's also been wanted for a shooting at a home in May. What the fuck? And in that shooting, which was allegedly over a woman, a baby was almost hit from a bullet. Wow, it's almost like he has an MO. You won't suck my dick, I'm gonna kill your kids. Fantastic. He's expected to be charged with 3 counts of attempted murder for the shooting, as well as shooting into an inhabited dwelling and assault with a deadly weapon from the May incident. This is why we need Emperor William. Emperor William would know what to do. And y'all know exactly what he would do. We would be turning this dude into fertilizer, which is, you know, shooting women's kids because they won't fuck you is kind of exactly what, you know, maybe he deserves. Yeah.
I'd say you jam one of these in the back of a white man's skull, twist the handle like so, and then your blood runs out through the hole here.
That's a fun, fun clip. All right, that's fun. Yeah. King of the Hill is just good times. All right, what else do I have in here? San Francisco. If passed, a bill, SB 233, will offer sex workers immunity from prosecution if they contact police to report a violent crime. I think that's a good thing. Wow, all right. I want to see who wrote this fucking article. Nuala Sawyer. Nuala is fucking serious as shit, because this is how the article starts. In 2001, I was raped by a serial rapist who was preying primarily on prostitutes in the city of Oakland, says Veronica Mamet, a former escort. I wanted to report the rape and was not able to. Rachel West of the U.S. Prostitutes Collective tried for about 3 years to get Oakland Police Department to take my statement without threatening to arrest me, and they would not do it. And meanwhile, this man continued to rape prostitutes. 3 weeks after he raped me, he raped another prostitute and stabbed her in the face with a knife, permanently scarring her. Damn. It's sadly not an uncommon story. Decades of stigma had made it nearly impossible for sex workers to report such crimes to police without risk of persecution. Current laws are designed to make it ridiculously easy to arrest and charge them. Even having condoms on one's person can be used as evidence someone is engaging in sex work. Because of this, the majority of violence inflicted upon sex workers goes unreported over the victims' not unjustified fears they'll be arrested and charged while their assailants walk free. On Monday, State Senator Scott Wiener introduced a new legislation to better protect professional sex workers facing this dilemma. Senate Bill 233 eliminates the possibility that condom possession can be used as probable cause for an arrest and provides long overdue immunity for sex workers who come forward about assaults. He says, quote, "We should be doing everything we can to protect the health and safety of all people, particularly sex workers. To be the victim of a crime and then be fearful that if you go to police to report the crime, you might yourself get arrested for sex work is not the right incentive. We want to send a clear signal to sex workers and everyone else that we want you to report crimes to police. We want you to feel safe going to police for help." I mean, yeah, that would be nice, but it's like, you know. However, one Senate bill isn't going to change decades of persecution, as San Francisco has already witnessed. An agreement drafted by the advocates and signed by the SFPD Chief Bill Scott in 2010 guaranteed nearly identical protections for San Francisco sex workers, something that Rachel West of U.S. Prostitutes Collective called a huge breakthrough and was really the basis for this bill to come forward. Yeah. I mean, I dig it. I think my, sorry, y'all. I'm, like, having engineering issues. I keep trying to play the instrumentals underneath, and it seems like they're not playing. So, I don't know what's up with that. Okay. I don't know. I'm gonna have to have William fix it. Oh, no. Alright, So back to this article. But even in the wake of that agreement, trust in the San Francisco Police Department remains fairly low. Women on the street continue to report arrests, particularly in the Mission District, where a sex worker abatement unit has been active. The ongoing situation of police crackdowns going on all over the Bay Area, we know the situation makes it difficult to report, says West. Women are busy running from police because they're afraid of being arrested. In that type of situation, they're not going to be likely to report. The crackdowns undermine San Francisco's policy and this bill. If their safety is going to be taken seriously and prioritized, we have to look at this issue too. Nevertheless, the potential passage of this bill could still help people like Mamet, who was willing to report her rape. And she's not alone. Incidents of violence are high, particularly for street-based sex worker. All right. So it says, particularly for street-based prostitutes, sex workers of color, or those who identify as transgender. It's just weird when someone uses prostitutes and sex workers in the same sentence. A study conducted in 2014 by the University of California in St. James Infirmary found 60% of sex workers experienced some type of violence while at work, 32% said they'd experienced a physical attack, 29% had been victims of sexual assault, and 40% of everyone interviewed claimed they'd had a negative interaction with law enforcement when trying to report these incidents. While much work has to be done to improve relationships between sex workers and police, SB 233 can still be seen as a necessary step in humanizing those in the sex industry. Yeah, I mean, I would like to see that. I think that would be wonderful. But shit. Ugh. It just seems so difficult to get people to actually fucking respect sex workers. And it's like, for what? Like, people are so... And, you know, I keep seeing it pop up on, like, social media, like Twitter especially. People are like, you can't say that sex work is a real job because then our daughters will want to be sex workers. And it's like, so what is your solution? Have somebody else's daughter be murdered and raped because it's better for sex workers to die than exist? Like, that's what you want to teach your daughters as a moral base? It's okay to hurt other women? Okay. Yeah. All right. Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This show is so black that Father Teresa makes me get a tan before I go on this show.
That's fun. All right. I think my last story for now, which isn't really a story as much as it is, like, a whole fucking conversation about police and whatnot. Something that came across my newsfeed on Twitter was about a cop in Florida named Zach Wester, who's apparently under investigation because he framed like 100 people. And that's not, you know, being hyperbolic or whatever. They are literally thinking right now he's framed about 100 people, mostly by planting drugs on them. I watched a little video clip about it because apparently this nigga was like bold as fuck and did this shit with his fucking body cam on because that's how much he doesn't fucking care. Right. Yeah. So I was like, well, let me Google this and see what's going on. So it turns out that this actually goes back to last year. Uh-huh. Where it came out in 2018 in September that he was planting meth on people. And so the first article that I came across was involving... Oh, okay, this is confusing. Apparently the town is called Mariana. And I was like, why is it Mariana hyphen Christina? But I do believe her name is... The prosecutor in the case, her name is Christina. The town is Mariana. So, and this is off the Tallahassee.com, the Tallahassee Democrat. Christina Pumphrey started hearing whispers about a Jackson County deputy, Zachary Wester, not long after joining the state's attorney's office. You can't trust him, some public defenders told her. You've got to watch him. Our clients are complaining about him. Pumphrey, who spent nearly 15 years as a state government lawyer, went to work for the 14th Judicial Court's prosecutor's office in early May. A native of nearby Blountstown, I probably said that wrong, she was a familiar face in the courthouse on Lafayette Street, where she had done trial work for the Department of Children and Families Child Services Welfare Section. She was assigned two simple drug possession cases. After warnings about Wester, she started taking a closer look at his traffic stops and arrest. She read his reports and made a habit of pulling his body cam videos. She noticed something was off. Among other things, his written accounts of the stops didn't match what she would see with her own eyes on the body footage camera, which is like, that's bold as fuck that you are filming yourself doing some shit and then fucking lying about it because you just assume as a white male cop, hashtag good cops, hashtag blue lives murder, no one's going to do shit to you. Nobody's going to check you. Mm-hmm. All right. Pumphrey, however, didn't set out to become a whistleblower. But after sharing her concerns about Wester with higher ups, she set off a chain reaction that ultimately led to his firing, her resignation, and the recent dismissal of nearly 120 cases involving the ex-deputy. All right, so it wasn't even 100, it was 120, shit, that we know of. The revelations exposed serious cracks in the criminal justice system in Jackson County. Until Pumphrey's arrival, it appears no one was closely monitoring Wester's body camera videos, one of which shows him with possible drugs in his hand before conducting a search of a pickup truck. The Wester case prompted Jackson County Judge Wade Mercer to inform prosecutors and public defenders he will no longer accept pleas in felony cases at arraignment. Before that, defendants often agreed to plea deals during these early court appearances, something that short-circuited discovery and ended cases quickly before attorneys could review all the evidence. In a September 18th letter to the state's attorney's office and the public defender's office, Mercer wrote, quote, "It was apparent no one was taking time to review videos that led to a rash of recent dismissals." He said he wanted to do what he could to make sure, quote, "quick pleas at arraignment don't contribute to future errors." I'm extremely thankful that ASA Pumphrey's diligence led to the discovery of these apparently inappropriate actions of a law enforcement officer, and I cannot help but wonder if this might have been caught sooner if more time was spent thoroughly reviewing our cases by both state and defense, but also by the court. Pumphrey's concerns about Wester went up the chain of command at the state's attorney's office and eventually were forwarded to the Jackson County Sheriff's Office, which launched an internal review. The Florida Department of Law Enforcement is conducting its own investigation. Niggas love investigating. No charges have been filed. Pumphrey, meanwhile, decided to leave the state's attorney's office, a job she loved, and has put in her notice earlier this month. Mm-hmm. On Thursday, Pumphrey filed a whistleblower retaliation complaint with the Florida Commission on Human Relations against state's attorney Glenn Hess. Because she was a state employee, the complaint is a necessary prelude to a possible lawsuit against the state's attorney. Her complaint is that she was ostracized and ignored after raising red flags about Wester. The plaintiff was told by her superiors that things were blowing up and she was yelled at about finding evidence showing criminal charges had been fabricated. So she got yelled at for doing her fucking job? And that's that shit, you know? And I know, I've said it 100 times, but I always fucking come back to it. This is why we say things like systemic oppression or systemic bigotry, systemic discrimination, because it's not just the cops who are doing this. It's cops who are doing this while prosecutors look on, while judges fucking tolerate it, while prison guards reinforce the system that's getting these people, innocent people, locked up. It's not just cops. It's a whole fucking system. The plaintiff was also told by her supervisor that she was messing up investigations by dismissing cases. Dismissing cases of innocent people. What the fuck? Hess, however, noted state prosecutors should have been sounding the alarm bell about a lack of manpower to review an avalanche of body camera video coming from law enforcement agencies. He also said Pumphrey's complaint will not hold up to scrutiny. All right, Hess, fuck you. Miss Pumphrey was a rookie prosecutor who was in over her head and failed to follow directions of her highly experienced supervisors. She was a fucking attorney for 15 years. What the fuck do you even mean? All right. So Pumphrey, oh yeah, okay, the article even says it. Pumphrey, a seasoned attorney, after I scroll past all these fucking pop-up ads, in her first criminal prosecution job, had a number of open cases before her during her first days on the job. She decided to start reviewing body camera videos from Wester arrests in cases that hadn't yet progressed to plea deals. To start with, it was a lot of something that didn't feel right, she said in an interview with the Tallahassee Democrat. And then it was he just searched a car when he had no legal reason to be searching cars. One video from June 7th appeared to be particularly off. Wester pulled over a van with a couple in the front seat and two small children in the back. After calling for assistance, a drug-sniffing dog alerted on the front driver's side, allowing Wester to search. He told an officer that the front passenger, Kimberly Hazelwood, was acting suspiciously. I would just like to know Kimberly's race personally. At one point, Wester picked up an Excedrin bottle from the floor and examined it before tossing it back. Later, he took it back to his cruiser and tested it before delivering the news to Hazelwood. The bottle was positive for methamphetamine and she was under arrest. Pumphrey, later reviewing the video, found Hazelwood perfectly calm, contrary to Wester's description. She noticed Wester conducted the field test so quickly the footage from that part of the video appeared to run in fast motion. Her gut told her the bottle was empty. The field test, she figured, was a charade. I watched it a couple times and it just wasn't there. I don't think anything was in the bottle. I think, and I'm saying I think because there's no evidence, I think the meth went in the bottle after she got arrested and before it went to the lab. Which then, of course, the question is, where is this nigga getting meth from? Like, is he actually finding people with meth, keeping it, compensating it, not turning it in, and then using it to frame up other people? I don't know. Unlike others Wester has arrested during his 2 years at the sheriff's office, Hazelwood had a squeaky clean record. She told Wester her only vices were cigarettes and Dr. Pepper. Hazelwood was arrested on possession of meth and paraphernalia. Hold on, but she didn't even have any paraphernalia. What? All right, and released after spending a few days behind bars. Pumphrey dropped the charges early in July, but that didn't erase the stain and stigma from Wester's arrest. One of the unfortunate things about this is the lady had no criminal history at all. She didn't even have a driving ticket, but if anyone pulls her criminal history now, she's got an arrest for meth. Pumphrey said she has no idea why Wester would do what he's accused of doing. He deserves to be in prison, she said. He put people in prison, and I'm not saying they were all innocent, because they weren't. It's as if he stole things from people. He did it in a roundabout way, but he stole people's livelihood, their freedom, their credibility. After seeing the Hazelwood arrest footage, Pumphrey became convinced Wester was planning drugs. He seemed to target poor white residents with criminal records, people no one would believe if they claimed they were being framed. She went to her supervisor with cases that didn't feel right and got various responses. But she knew I had some concerns and some very serious concerns, said Pumphrey. After an assistant public defender also reached out to the supervisor to express doubt about Wester, the supervisor contacted the sheriff's office. In mid-July, after finishing the docket at the courthouse, her supervisor asked if she would be comfortable talking to Lieutenant Mike Hodges, who oversaw internal affairs investigations. Mm-hmm. Pumphrey said, of course. I'm trying to, get to the end of it. She said Hodges asked if she could identify the video she had concerns with and make notes. She gave him a first batch of 5 or 6 videos around July 24th. The sheriff's department yanked Wester from patrol duty. Hodges called her August 1st to say the deputy was on administrative leave. Okay, so it seems like they're almost trying to investigate this. She was told the sheriff's department already had evidence it needed to fire Wester, but Pumphrey said she felt compelled to keep reviewing videos. It bothered me that this evidence was in the state's attorney's office and the state's attorney was prosecuting innocent people. I'm not saying they reviewed it and it was knowingly, I'm just saying the evidence was there. Around that time, Pumphrey came across a video of a February 15th traffic stop that ended the arrest of Teresa Odom on charges including possession of meth. She backed up and slowed down the video until she spotted what became a smoking gun in Wester's probe, something resembling a baggie clenched in his left hand before his search began. There it is, it's what I've known all along, Pumphrey said to herself. She turned the Odom video over to investigators. Attorney Hess acknowledged last week the video caused him to, quote, lose confidence in Deputy Wester, whom the sheriff's office had fired on September 10th. But Pumphrey wasn't sure the video would have an impact. Pumphrey said everyone in the system is responsible for what happened. Yeah. There's supposed to be checks and balances. In this case, there's a dishonest officer, but there's still his supervisor at the sheriff's department and whatever quality control program they have in place. There's the state's attorney's office who's supposed to be reviewing evidence. There's the public defender who's supposed to be representing the people they defend, and if something's wrong, filing the appropriate motion. You can't just blame it on one thing or one person. She said many people Wester arrested fit a profile or had criminal histories. There's an assumption that they're guilty. The person is a frequent flyer. I see them often. They were guilty last time. I'm assuming they're guilty this time. Some of it gets by because cases are numbers and it's just processing another file. Hess, the state attorney, had a different take. I'm sure he did. He said the Florida Prosecuting Attorneys Association had been warning for 2 years that prosecutors didn't have enough manpower to review videos. Okay, so did y'all talk about that? Did y'all tell people that we can't review all these videos though? Okay. He said, but we do provide them to defense counsel who after all should be looking into their videos to defend their clients. Okay, so it's not y'all fault. Okay. Mm-hmm. Pumphrey said she enjoyed working for the state's attorney's office and loved her colleagues, many of whom she had worked with for years during her time with DCFS, but she still put in her resignation. I don't want to work in an environment that allows this to happen. She has too much integrity. All right. So, wow. Okay, so that happened. And then this article, which I don't remember if I said, is from last year, right? So this is from September 29th of last year. Now, here's the update, because what I saw was recent on social media. It was on Twitter in particular. And so now it's like, all right, so what's up with this guy? Where is this story going? I'm kind of mad I missed it when it happened. And now it turns out that people are suing the department because this guy has been planting so many drugs, right? So this is from June 17th, and this is on the appeal. They note that, they go through some of these cases. There was Derek Benfield, who was arrested by Zachary Wester, charged over $1,000 in fines and court fees and sentenced to a year in county jail. He was served 7 months into his sentence. And then in September 2018, the state's attorney's office dropped the case and those of 118 others. Yeah. Uh-huh. But last month, Benefield and 8 others filed federal lawsuits accusing Wester and 2 other deputies of planting drugs and making illegal arrests in the Jackson County Sheriff's Office of Negligence. Okay. So, all right. So they're getting sued. And then I have here, this is on the Inquisitor from about 10 hours ago. The viral video channel in the now is circulating disturbing body camera footage of a Florida police officer planting drugs in a woman's car and arresting her. Zach Wester allegedly did the same to over 100 others, which led to at least 10 arrests, but the story is far from over. The appeal reports Wester was fired from his job and a criminal investigation is currently open. All right, but no charges have been filed yet, and some of his victims are being subpoenaed for interviews in connection with the investigation. Mm-hmm. Tallahassee attorney Marie Maddox, who is representing the victims in cases against Wester, told the Tallahassee Democrat she has been working with 30 people since May and assured there would be more in her future. The level of devastation in these lives and the lives of these folks is horrific. They've lost everything. Wow. All right. And then they go back to talking about Christina Pumphrey. I'm just going to kind of like skip and see if we can get any new details. People were concerned when being arrested. It wasn't like, okay, crap, I'm busted. It was like, what do you mean? I don't use drugs. And then, of course, it notes here, Pumphrey said she was given explicit instructions not to dismiss the cases, even though she knew that these people were innocent. Now here we go to the victims. Some victims are suing Wester. Many of the arrested are still dealing with the effects of charges. Some had already had prior drug charges, meaning the consequences of their arrests were amplified, and the small community of Jackson County where Wester worked heard of their arrests and viewed them differently. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is, like, fucking wild. And this reminds me of that shit with, who was it, like, what was her name? I just totally forgot her name, but worked for, like, a medical examiner's office and was framing people up, like, framed up, like, thousands of drug cases. And it's just like, this is what we're doing, huh? Okay. Yeah, so you gotta keep an eye on this fucking guy, Zach Wester. I just want to see if actual charges are gonna be brought up. I certainly fucking hope that they are, obviously, but, you know, I don't have a lot of faith in it, because the DA is still like, oh, it's the public defender's fault, and, oh, we didn't, you know, tell them not, you know, we didn't tell the prosecutor, Pumphrey, to stop investigating, when, like, very clearly you did. Y'all didn't want her to do this shit, because you wanted to keep your numbers and conviction rates up. Fuck it. And that's why the whole system is fucked up. Yay! You had me at fuck the system, I think is what the kids are saying these days, right? Yeah? Yeah, you had me at fuck the system.
This show is brought to you by the fuck that Father Teresa does not give.
All right, but I think that's about all I have for now. I'm going to be out of here. I'll be recording some more tomorrow. Thank you for hanging out with me. Thank you for spending your time with me. And, if you like what we do, you can always hit us up on paypal.me/Phoenix and William, or you can hit us up on patreon.com/WineCellarMediaFund. Thanks for hanging out with us, and let's do this again tomorrow. And always remember, if there's any stories in particular you want me to cover, you can always hit me up on, at Uppity Negress, 2 P's, 2 S's, on Twitter, and you can just DM me. My DMs are open. No dick pics, please. But you can always DM me at Uppity Negress. And, you know, people have done it before, like, hey, can you cover this story? And, like, I'm happy to cover shit that y'all put up. So, let me know. All right. Anyways, I have, like, fucking cotton mouth from talking so much. It's hard to podcast without a co-host. You can't stop and take sips of water. And I'm just like, oh, blah, blah, blah. Okay. All right. Let me get the fuck up out of here. Y'all be well, please.